as a freelancer, you have to be secure in your insecurity, which was a bit of a revelation to me. And I kind of, I never thought of it that way. But if you think about it, once you prepare yourself and once you accept that, you know, that this can happen, then you are not kind of thrown off as much if this does happen to you.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 53. Today we want to share an important discussion that we don't tend to hear a lot of honest conversations about, at least not in a public forum. Freelancers and business owners know that the feast and famine cycle can really take a toll, especially if you're unprepared to handle times of famine. If you've ever been in the middle of a famine in your business, you know how unsettling it can be. Waiting for that next project, wondering how you're going to make it to the next big check. But it doesn't have to be this way. The feast and famine cycle doesn't have to be on repeat in your business. There is another way to run a freelance business, and that's what we want to share with you in this conversation. We're excited to welcome our colleague Yulia Tsibysheva to join us today. Yulia is a Russian marketing translator based in the UK. Originally from Russia, she lived in the UK for over 10 years and has worked in the translation industry for over 15. She works with clients in the fashion, beauty, jewelry, and travel industries and specializes in web and app localization as well as transcreation. Recently, Yulia also started a new role as a Russian language lead at Flow Health App. Welcome to the podcast, Yulia.
Hi, Veronica. Hi, Madalena. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I think I have come across your name so many times from different things, and I felt like I already knew you, so it's funny to finally be able to talk to you one-on-one. So we're excited that you're joining us today to talk about this all-too-common reality that most freelancers have faced or will face at some point in their business. So let's just dive in with the first question. It's a bit unrelated to the topic, but we would like to know more about you. So could you tell us about your freelance business, what services you offer, and when and how you started your freelance career, and even how it's maybe evolved over time?
Yes, sure. So I started translating when I was still at university. It was back in Russia, in Yekaterinburg. And essentially, to get started with translation, I was calling several translation agencies, of which one was happy to give me a chance as a student. And I also signed up for any interpreting assignments that were coming through my university, and this really helped me get established. I started off by doing some very technical things for which I must admit my degree didn't really prepare me at all. So I was learning on the job a lot of the time, yes. And gradually I transitioned more into financial translation and did a one-year course in that area. And I did quite enjoy it at the time, and it helped me get a job at PricewaterhouseCoopers in Moscow, where I moved after the university. Yeah, it was a really brilliant start to a translation career, and I had some really, really exciting colleagues there, and they were really experienced, and it was lovely to be able to learn from them. But unfortunately, the financial crisis of 2008 struck right after I was hired. So unfortunately, I was laid off pretty quickly, which, yeah, so sometimes can happen. That was when I found myself freelancing again. And I did quite a lot of work for a small agency in Moscow. There was quite a big variety of projects, but some of them were focused quite a bit on fashion. One of their clients was Louis Vuitton, so I was translating quite a bit for their website and a lot of the press releases and articles. And this was such a great opportunity to really get to know one particular brand, because you know, as freelancers, we don't always have that luxury of really focusing on one client or one niche. So that was priceless in terms of really getting to know the brand, the philosophy, the history, especially as it's it has quite a long history as well. And around the same time, I was also doing a lot of work for a photography magazine. So that was another fairly creative pursuit that I had.
Wow.
And then I moved to the UK. And somewhere along the way, I also ended up with a master's in sustainable development, which is, of course, completely unrelated. And yes, it seemed like a good idea at the time to kind of pivot into a slightly different area, as it was just gaining traction, I think, both in Russia and in Europe. But it turned out that it was quite a challenge to break into a completely new industry, especially when you've just arrived into a new country. So I kind of had to shelve it for a little bit and went back to translation more or less full time. I did quite a lot of work in and around sustainable development, however, so that was nice. And yeah, in terms of my first 2 years in the UK, I have to admit I made a big mistake of not building up a local client base right from the start, thinking quite naively that my Russian clients, you know, they would always be there. I'd be completely fine for maybe not the rest of my life, but for a little while, but this is not what happened at all, because nearly overnight, I think the magazine went bankrupt, and then the agency that I was working for again was no longer operational. So I kind of learned it the hard way, if you like. But over the last couple of years, last few years, I think I've been in a relatively good place, and I've been mostly working on marketing translations, website and app localization, as well as transcreation projects, and I do really enjoy all of them. And having worked on several large app localization projects this year, I really wanted to find a part-time or a full-time position in localization. And just about a month ago, I eventually landed a part-time role as a Russian language lead at Floor, which is a women's health app. So that's where I am at the moment, more or less.
That is quite a story.
Yeah,
it's amazing. But I can also see how your different, you know, areas you've worked in could go together. Like obviously now, sustainability and fashion is a huge topic, right? Yeah. But oh, fascinating. Wow. So you have quite a bit of experience, perhaps, with our next question. What are some smart habits that have been crucial in your career, either related to work or physical, mental health, relationships, or anything else?
Yes, sure. I'm very happy to share what I've learned. And to be honest, I wish I had acquired those habits myself quite a bit sooner. They would have saved me quite a lot of stress and trouble. But the one I can think of is something that I briefly mentioned was I was for quite a long time complacent about the clients and the project that I had. And then this had to stop, of course. So I learned not to be, and I started being much more proactive in reaching out to people. Most recently, this meant being more active on LinkedIn and Twitter, starting my blog, tweaking my website, learning about SEO, content marketing, and things like that, both for my own website and for my clients as well. Smart habit number two that I can think of is to keep learning about your areas of expertise and about running your own business. And with the form, I think I've always been quite okay. And it has served me well in terms of looking for new opportunities, like the localization job that I got. But in terms of business skills, again, I think for quite a long time I was in a head in the sand kind of situation. And it's really over the last maybe 4 or 5 years that I realized just how critical these skills can be and how important it is to constantly learn about not just translation, but ways to optimize your business.
Yeah, for sure.
Another smart habit that I have developed, I think, is just learning to do things that don't seem easy or comfortable or straightforward. Mm. And I do tend to have to push through quite a lot of resistance for doing some of them. But more often than not, good things do actually come out of it. So I think it's really worth the effort to try and do things that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. What do they say that what's on the other side of your comfort zone? I don't know if it's success or something like that, but there's a saying like that.
Yeah. And yeah, I love those motivational quotes. I must admit, I do quite enjoy them. And I have the one above my desk that says, always do what you're afraid to do. I remember a friend coming in to visit, and she saw it on the wall and she high-fived me. So clearly it's something that resonates with a lot of people and a lot of freelancers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I wanted to mention too, before I forget, that Yulia recently wrote a blog post for the Slavic Languages Division blog, the division of American Translators Association, about localization, and also did a podcast interview the SLD podcast, Slovo. So I think those would be really interesting for anyone who is interested in working in this field, whether they work with Slavic languages or not. So we'll make sure to link those in our show notes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much for mentioning those. Yeah.
All right. So we wanted to talk to you about a very common issue for many freelancers, the feast and famine cycle. We have all been there at one point or another in our career. So what advice do you have for fellow translators who find themselves in a famine cycle? How can they maintain a level head about their business?
Yes, I feel like I've had some really, really prolonged famine episodes throughout my career. So I feel like, I've experienced it quite a few times. And yes, keeping a level head is not always easy. But I think that with every such new episode, you kind of have the previous experience to fall back on and to remember that, you do eventually come out of them. And so I think every time it becomes slightly less panic inducing. And I think there's this perception that, that they shouldn't be happening if you are running your business in a efficient way and in a proactive way. But also, I think it's useful to try and accept them for what they are, and to try and accept the fact that they still can happen through no fault of your own. Mm. And I've been reading quite a lot about freelancing in general throughout the last year, especially. Last couple of years, and there was one book that I enjoyed. It's called The Freelance Bible by Alison Grade. She's based in the UK, and she was writing about a lot of things that are UK specific. So I loved that. And she had this phrase that as a freelancer you have to be secure in your insecurity, which was a bit of a revelation to me. And I never thought of it that way. But if you think about it, once you prepare yourself and once you accept that, that this can happen, then you are not kind of thrown off as much if this does happen to you. Mm. And another thing I was reading the other day was there's the freelance magazine that has just launched in the UK. And there was an interview with a really experienced photographer and video editor. And he's worked on some really high-end big profile projects, and he was saying that he still gets panicky when his work goes quiet. So this made me think, oh, you know, it's not just me, and it's not just, you know, translators. It's pretty much the life of most freelancers. So, you know, whenever I read things like that, they kind of normalize this experience for me a little bit. And I know you mentioned that, you know, that there's a different way to run a business, and I completely agree that you cannot just kind of sit there and wait for the famine phase to pass, and you have to be really strategic with what you do. But yeah, like I said, I think it's also helpful to know that these things can happen, and they are part of freelancer's life. And on that same note, I think that sometimes we really need those quiet times to just be able to slow down a little bit and to reflect on, you know, the project that we've just worked on, and maybe to take this time to kind of put those lessons that we've learned, either good or bad ones, from a particular project into some form of content, maybe, or to kind of just keep a record for ourselves. And I personally found that these famine episodes can make me quite bold. So I often think in terms of, well, you know, I don't have anything to lose by contacting this person or the company. And one such experience I had was about 5 or 6 years ago, when again there was a quiet period for some reason, and about the same time I came across mindfulness and meditation, and there was that one book that I picked up in a bookshop. It was by Danny Penman and Mark Williams. It's called Mindfulness: A Practical Guide to Finding Peace in a Frantic World, and it was really mind-blowing at the time, especially because it came with a CD, so you could do those meditations over 8 weeks, I think it was. And I had this idea of contacting a Russian publisher that I knew works in kind of this business and self-help area, and suggesting to translate this book. So I plucked up all the courage I had and just emailed them out of the blue to say, oh, you know, it would be really cool if you had this book published, and I'd be really glad to work on the project. And yeah, the funny thing was they did come back to me within a couple of days and said, yeah, you know, do you want to do a test translation? And I said, well, obviously I do. And
great.
I did get the job. I mean, yeah, in terms of money, I wouldn't say it was anything to shout about, but yeah, it was a really great experience. Mm-hmm. And I translated a couple more books for them on the same topic. So yeah, I think if it wasn't for that really quiet period when I was really looking at all possible options of how and what I could do, I probably would have never reached out to them.
Yeah. So, oh, wow. Yeah. I love it. So I love a few things. I love many things that you said. First of all, I really like that you look for advice and inspiration outside of the translation and interpreting field, and you look at other type of professions that, you know, where people can work as freelancers. And that is something many of us don't do, and I think we should do more often. And the other thing I really liked is how you illustrated how you can take that sort of point in your career where you feel, you know, many people would feel kind of low, like, oh, I'm in a famine cycle. Like, that's a time when many people can get depressed or discouraged or just kind of feel out of sorts, but you turn it into something positive and you put courage into it, and like, okay, I'm going to be bold and I'm going to do this thing. This is wonderful. And it shows that it pays off because you landed that project. It's really cool.
Thank you. Not to say that I never feel bad on those kind of during those weeks. But yeah, sometimes, yeah, it really depends on kind of where you are in your career and where you are emotionally. So
yes,
yeah, it's not unfamiliar to me to to feel a little bit down either.
Of course. Yeah, it's normal. So what are your tips for navigating the feast-famine cycle and finding long-term ways to overcome it?
Yeah, so over the years, I've been reading a lot on the subject and always trying to learn some new strategies from other freelancers. So I came to the conclusion that pretty much the only solution is to do marketing little and often and consistently, so pretty much all the time, instead of waiting until, you know, you sit there and you don't have any work or any other commitments. This time might never come. It's really essential to kind of build it into your routine, into your business, and to make it kind of something normal rather than something that you do, you know, every once in a while. If you don't happen to have any other better things to do. And another thing I'd say is that I've become a little bit more flexible in terms of how I look at potential work or clients. And this goes back to the discussion about grades, which is always a hot topic in the freelancer community, I know. And in no way am I suggesting that, you know, we as translators shouldn't be charging decent rates. But from my experience over the last few years, I had those potential projects where, you know, the rates didn't seem quite what I wanted, but mm-hmm. I was also looking at the project more broadly. So I was looking, you know, what else would I be getting out of it? Maybe it's the new skills and the localization skills that I gained on one of the projects was something I don't really regret doing. Or maybe it's a high volume that, you know, would keep you busy for 6 months or 12 months or even 18 months. It can also be quite a big factor. Or maybe it's, again, a big project that would help you become a subject matter expert pretty much in something mm-hmm. new. Or perhaps it's the new connections that you can build. If you know there's going to be a team of people working on that project. I had a couple of projects where, you know, the rate on its own maybe didn't seem that good, but there were so many other things involved that made me think, it doesn't sound completely ideal, but, you know, I will be getting so many other things out of it. And for me, it really has opened many doors. So I think it does help to sometimes get this broader picture of the opportunities you might be coming across.
Yeah, this is such good advice. And so we wanted to also ask you, because you apparently have experience in a lot of different areas, and I really liked what you said about marketing a little bit at a time, but consistently. So could you tell us what marketing methods work best for you and how do you find time to fit them into your schedule?
Oh, absolutely. In terms of fitting them into my schedule, it's probably the tricky bit, but I've been figuring it out through trial and error again mm-hmm. over the years. And personally, I found that I need to reserve mornings for project work, and it's often an almighty effort not to get distracted first thing in the morning. So I try not to go on social media until around about after lunch. And things like blog posts require creativity for me. And this is something I like to do more in the evenings. Mm. Although, yeah, I have to say there's not always enough energy left for that. that's the reality, unfortunately, mm-hmm. for me as well. And in terms of platforms or kind of more specific methods, LinkedIn has been great for finding new clients and projects and generally putting my name out there. And I only started taking it more seriously, I don't know, maybe a year ago, a year and a half. I have to say that does come with a price, and it does tend to seep into the workday and evenings quite a bit for me. And in fact, I know I need to be a bit more disciplined with this. Another thing I try to do is to keep my website updated fairly regularly, and I have this little portfolio slide on the main page that I quite like sort of tinkering with, and it does look pretty once you set it up. So whenever I have a kind of big project that I want to put out there on the website, I try and do it. And it doesn't take too much time, in fact. And one other thing that worked for me, but is a bit of a unconventional a client acquisition method probably, is that I spoke at a conference last year. It was a BP conference, online one. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it has brought me a good client, which I didn't expect, and I didn't go into thinking, oh, you know, that there'd be clients everywhere. But there was one, and I was really happy that, you know, it was such a nice reward for taking the plunge and being brave enough to even send my proposal, which again a couple of years ago I wouldn't even have considered doing. So that was nice.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I mean, I think it's important to note that, like, some of these things do feel uncomfortable at first, but then you do them and you realize, wait, this actually worked, and this wasn't as bad as I thought. And then you can end up doing more of the same once you realize what works and what doesn't. And and something else you said that I thought was really important to note is that you said you try not to get on social media until after lunch or something like that. And I think that anytime you can give yourself certain blocks or periods of time that work well for you and not necessarily what everybody else is doing, but really make it work for you, I think that's where you can find a good level of focus and success too.
Mm.
Yeah. So we wanted to ask you if you have any smart tips for our listeners to create more times of feast than famine while not falling into a state of burnout, because some of the things, you know, if people are listening, they might think, wow, that's a lot of, you know, different things that you could try and do. But some people can, you know, say, I have to do it all, or I have to do it all at once. And you can easily fall into like a feeling of burnout. So what are your tips for creating more times of feast than famine?
Oh, yes, it is such a delicate balance, isn't it? You don't have to have so much work that you feel completely overwhelmed and then need mm-hmm. several weeks or even months to recover from.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've been there as well, and it's not a nice feeling. And yeah, it just takes so much time out of your life and out of your year to recover. I don't recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it goes back to being really strategic with your marketing and always having an eye on that, and mm-hmm. keeping up with whatever marketing strategy you decide to use. But then once you, when you happen to have a quieter time, you can amp up your efforts or look for alternative ways to market mm-hmm. yourself and maybe try something new. And as for the feast part, again, this can be quite tricky to navigate as well. And I think there are several things you can do. One is to outsource some of the work to the trusted colleagues, provided that, you know, the client is okay with that and that you have set this up in advance and you know exactly how this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is something you have mentioned in one of the recent episodes. I think Veronica was mentioning a group of translators that you work with. I think it's a really smart idea.
Mm.
Another strategy is to say to yourself that this is going to be an intense period, but it's going to be kind of a short one, and then to make sure that you do take some time off afterwards to properly rest and recover. And the third option that I can think of is to, just turn down the least interesting or the least lucrative work and focus on the project that you enjoy the most. And you could say that you're kind of leaving money on the table with this, but again, you only have so many hours in the day. And I think it also feels quite empowering for you as a freelancer to be able to say that, oh, you know, I am in a place where I can pick and choose my work and my clients. And I think that it really helps to build your your confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true.
Great tips.
Switching gears a little bit, we know that like us, you're a parent, and we don't want to miss the chance to talk about freelancing as a parent. Mm-hmm. What tips and tricks can you share when it comes to enjoying your freelance career and parenthood?
Well, thank you so much for asking about this. I know I could probably talk for another hour about this topic.
Yes.
I must say I'm really blessed to have a lovely daughter, and she's nearly six. She's very curious and always up for anything, and she loves reading and writing. And she's also quite into languages, and yeah, she's genuinely fun to be around. And in terms of tips and tricks, it's I think with parenting it's always a bit difficult to say whether you've just been lucky or whether it's something that you did on purpose that has worked. But let's see what I can think of. So one thing I'd say is that in the UK, we have quite early bedtime for children in general, which is typical here, but not so typical in the UK, in Russia. So I do sometimes get those kind of this clash mm-hmm. of child rearing traditions. It can be quite stressful. But yeah, what I do is I try to protect those evenings for myself. And she knows that I kind of this is the time that I need for myself to either finish some work or just unwind, and she has learned to accept that, which is great. And in terms of managing the time and the house chores, especially when kind of freelance work gets busy, I would try to do most of the things around the house when I'm with her, and kind of get her to help out as well. However, this was I have to say this was a bit easier before she started school. So she went to nursery about 2-3 days a week, and now there's not that much after not that much time after school at all. It's really full on. Another thing I can think of is that throughout lockdown we started writing a list of things that we need to do on a given day with her, and now she developed this love of writing lists as well. Which I know is great for kind of their writing skills, especially once they start primary school. And this really helps to keep track of things and see who is responsible for what. The only little problem we have is that sometimes our list kind of can be quite different. So you then have to reconcile them as well. But yeah, generally it works. It works well. And the last thing I'd say is that I'm sure the listeners would agree that, you know, we as linguists have quite a special relationship with books and languages. So I try to instill this love of reading and books in her as well. And we spend I spent quite a bit of time on finding books that we can enjoy together in Russian. A lot of them are either new or something that I didn't read as a child. So it's equally exciting for me to kind of get some new books and get stuck in to them. And I tend to look forward to those bedtime stories if I still have energy at the time. So especially that now that she's moved to kind of longer chapter books, some of them have either been translated really well, or you know they're kind of from a different era, and they kind of have this slightly different vocabulary. So again, I find myself thinking, oh, you know, I haven't come across this or that word for a little while, and she'd ask me like what this particular word means or where it comes from, and so it kind of gets me or keeps me in this kind of linguistic mm-hmm. zone as well.
That's wonderful. It just sounds a lot like my daughter too. My daughter loves making lists. And yes, they're very quite different than the lists I make for our day.
Yeah, they have their own agenda a lot of the time.
Yeah. So as you know, since you listen to our podcast, you know we talk a lot about work-life clarity, which is a term we picked up from the Deliberate Freelancer podcast that we all really love. So we prefer that definition rather than work-life balance. And we think it's extremely important for freelance language professionals. So what are your thoughts on this? And do you try to protect the boundaries between your work and personal life?
This is such a big problem, and I must admit I'm not always the best person at protecting these boundaries, and especially last year with the pandemic, I often felt, and I'm sure other people do too, that you know, everything was so much up in the air. There was no guarantee of anything anymore. Not that there's ever any guarantee, but you know, it was even worse, and I personally felt like I had to work twice as hard to make sure I still had work coming in then, and that I would still have work in, you know, 6 or 12 months' time. So it felt like quite a big effort and quite a big commitment. And I think it's so true that as a freelancer, you cannot always switch off easily. And these kind of work thoughts, they tend to follow you around the house a lot of the time. In terms of clarity, I think I know for myself that both work and family are important to me. And at the same time, I know it's really difficult to do both 100%. So I tend to accept the fact that sometimes it's going to be a struggle. And, you know, sometimes I need to prioritize one thing over the other. But then I always kind of try and tell to myself that, you know, this is going to be temporary. And, you know, if work gets busy, then, you know, there'll be a time when it's going to be less busy. But then, yeah, you know, the feelings of guilt, they're often still there. And it's a constant struggle, and it's a constant work in progress to navigate the two.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for this really important conversation. I think that people don't talk about feast and famine enough as a freelancer. And so I think you helped to normalize this discussion for us and to give some really great tips to our listeners.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you would like to recommend to anybody listening?
Oh, yes. I'd very much like to recommend a book that I have nearly finished. And it's called Grit by Angela Duckworth. It's essentially, it talks about how grit, effort and perseverance can help you achieve success in, you know, whichever way you want to define it. And she talks about how talent is not the only thing, and it only contributes a little, in fact. And it's quite fascinating to read how, you know, we as a society are obsessed with talent and genius, and thinking that, you know, talent is either something you have or you don't. She talks about lots of studies that have been done that show that with enough practice and determination, you can become pretty good at, you know, lots of things, pretty much anything, be it maths, swimming, playing cello or anything else. And I agree with a lot of things in this book, and it makes for a really fascinating read.
Cool. We'll definitely check that out. Yeah.
Great. We'll add the link to that too in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Yulia. We really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm sure that our listeners will find your tips very helpful. But before we go, tell us where our colleagues can find you online and learn more about you.
Sure. Thank you very much again for having me on this podcast. I've been a fan ever since it launched, and I really enjoyed the company and your guest speakers as well. So I have my website, which is www.choiceofwords.co.uk, and I'm also on LinkedIn, and I am on Twitter under Rue Choice of Words.
Great. Yeah, we will definitely link to everything in the show notes so people can find you. And to our listeners, Yulia created a free checklist and resource guide to help you through the roller coaster that is the feast and famine cycle. She even broke it down into short-term and long-term tips and added some books and articles for you to check out. So make sure that you're on our email list so that you can grab this one. Thanks again for joining us, Yulia.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode. Our email subscribers will get a summary of this episode with all the links to the resources that we mentioned today, including the free checklist and resource guide that Yulia created. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you like this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please follow our podcast, share it with your colleagues and friends, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This only takes a minute, and we have recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.